Sorry, thanks to the organizers for inviting me to speak here in this very exciting workshop and perfectly organized workshop, I would say. Today, I will give you sort of review of the main results that we have been obtaining in the last few years in collaboration with Marco Bianchi, Luca Griguolo, Mattias Leoni, Andrea Mauri, Michelangelo Preti, Domenico Seminara, and Jiazhu Zhang about supersymmetric Wilson loops in three-dimensional conformal field theories entering the ADS4 CFT3 correspondence. Okay, so let me first start by defining the subject of my talk. So what is a BPS Wilson loop, as you well know? If we have gauge theories with extended supersymmetry, we can try to define non-local operators, in particular Wilson lines, Wilson loops operators, which preserve a given amount of supersymmetry. As we heard already this morning from Simone, the prototype example of this kind of Wilson loops is the one that we can construct in four-dimensional n equal to 4 super Young Mills. This is the famous Maldacena-Wilson operator, which is nothing but the holonomy of a generalized connection, which includes the ordinary connection plus non-trivial coupling to the scalar, to the matter sector. And in particular, if you make a suitable choice of the contour and the coupling to the scalars, these operators preserves a given amount of supersymmetry. And in particular, if you compute it on the maximal circle with a theta constant, it turns out to be 1/2 BPS. Why we are interested in looking at this kind of operators? Well, there are many reasons why it's interesting to investigate their properties. First of all, even if they are BPS, they are actually non-protected operators. So if you compute them at quantum level, you will get a non-trivial function of the coupling constant, which means that you may want to compute them at weak couplings, and in this case, you will use ordinary perturbation theory, or you may want to compute them at strong coupling by using the dual string description in terms of a string worksheet ending on the contour of the operator according to the usual prescription. Or finally, you may ask yourself whether you can find a way to compute them at any finite coupling, and in fact, if you have enough supersymmetry, you can try localization. And many times it works, and you land on a matrix model, which sometimes may be computed in a large n limit. And if it is the case, you will end up with an exact expression for your operator, which is, at the end of the day, in fact, an exact interpolating function between strong and weak coupling, and can be used to make non-trivial checks of the ADS CFT correspondence. But there are also other reasons why we are interested in these operators. Another reason is that, as I will describe you in my talk, these operators are related to the Bremsstrahlung function and the Kasp anomalous dimension. I will define these objects. These are physical quantities that eventually can be even computed using integrability in ADS CFT. Therefore, these kind of operators can be used to check the integrability underlying the correspondence. And finally, if you have a Wilson line, a Wilson loop, it's obvious, it's natural to think of this object as a defect in your higher dimensional theory. And in particular, if you consider, as I will do in my talk, parametric Wilson loops, derivatives of this Wilson loop with respect to the parameter generates correlation functions for the one-dimensional conformal field theory defined on the Wilson line. Okay, so I will be focused on these objects in n equal to 6 three-dimensional IBJM theory. And as I will try to tell you, I mean, I will try to convince you that working in three dimensions, in fact, maybe, according to the taste, more fun or more headache, because as we will see, we have in three dimensions a larger spectrum of BPS Wilson loops compared to the four-dimensional case. And moreover, they have interesting features, interesting properties that are not shared with the four-dimensional cousins. Okay, so let me just give you a brief summary of my talk. So I will discuss these two main classes of BPS Wilson loops that you can define in three dimensions that I will call bosonic and fermionic Wilson loops. In particular, I will show you many features, few features, which goes through the study of cohomological equivalence and what we call framing. Then I will move to consider a generalization of these operators, introducing a given parameter, because certainly this turns out to be a more interesting class, which can in fact be used to generate many other things. And as a last part of my talk, I will try to give you a new interpretation of what is framing in this non-topological theory, and which is the relation of this framing with a physical quantity like the Bresdalum function. And then I will conclude with some future directions, discussing some future directions. Okay, so let me start by discussing this, by introducing basically these two classes of Wilson loops in three dimensions. So let me just quickly go through the usual matter and gauge content of the ABJM theory, just to fix the notations. So for me, A and A hat are the two gauge fields corresponding to the two gauge groups of the theory. They are subject to a Chern-Simon Lagrangian, plus matter, which goes into four complex scalars, say the fundamental representation of the R symmetry SU4 group, and the corresponding fermions. And this is just the action, part of the action, which governs the minimal coupling of matter to the gauge sector. And then there are also potential terms, but too long to write them. As you will know, this theory is dual in a given set of, for a given set of parameters, which means choosing a particular range for K and 1 and N2 can be dual to M theory on ADS4 cross S7 over ZK or type 2A strings on ADS4 cross CP3. Okay, so we can try to construct BPS Wilson loops as we do in four dimensions by generalizing the ordinary connection to be including some coupling to the matter sector. And for dimensional reasons and representation reasons, in three dimensions, if you want just to mimic what we do in four dimensions, which means coupling, the generalizing the connection to include the scalars, we have to include a biscalar, because in three dimensions, scalars have dimension one half. Okay, so this is the expression, the most obvious expression that you can write down for a generalized Wilson loop in three dimensions, which mimics what it is well known in four dimensions. Of course, we have two gauge groups in this case, so we will have two different bosonic, this is what I will call bosonic Wilson loops, one for A and one for A hat. Very good. So if you choose, in particular, gamma to be the great circle on S2 and the coupling to the scalars to be diagonal constant with this form, these two Wilson loops turn out to be 1/6 BPS. And for these two Wilson loops, a matrix model, an exact matrix model, has been constructed by these people, which computes, in fact, the vacuum expectation value. Okay, but in three dimensions, fermions have also dimension one. Therefore, one can think of using also fermions to generalize the gauge connection. And in fact, what has been done by these two people You can think of constructing what I will call fermionic Wilson loop, which is the holonomy of a superconnection associated to this supergroup, where, as you can see, on the diagonal part, we still have the same kind of couplings that we had for the Wilson loop, the bosonic ones, except that this M here is a little bit different, but in the off-diagonal terms, we have couplings to the fermions, okay? For this, first of all, this fermionic Wilson loop has enhanced supersymmetry compared to the bosonic one. In fact, if you compute it on the maximal circle, and for this particular set of couplings, it turns out to be 1/2 BPS. And for this Wilson loop, we do know an exact expression in terms of a matrix model, and we also have a string dual description in terms of 1/2 BPS string configuration. Okay, these Wilson loops share a number of properties. Let me just go through a couple of them. First of all, let me introduce the concept of framing, because this turns out to be quite important in connection with the physical quantities that we would like to compute at the very end. What is framing? So just to remind you, or if you don't know, just to make a sketchy description of what is framing, let me go back to consider a pure transimon theory, so no matter, no supersymmetry. This is a topological theory described by the usual transimon action. If we want to compute the ordinary Wilson loop, you know, for the ordinary connection, the best you can do is to expand the exponential and trade the calculation of this Wilson loop with the calculation of, in principle, an infinite number of correlation functions, okay? But remember, whenever we have correlation functions, we have to introduce a suitable regularization to tie possible divergences that may appear in the correlation function at coincident points. One way to do it is the following. So suppose that you want to compute the two-point function, the lowest order correction to the Wilson loop, at coincident points. What happens if you have if you want to regularize this correlation function? One possibility is to introduce what people call point splitting regularization, which means I compute this correlation function by taking the first gauge field running on the original path, on the original contour of the Wilson loop, whereas the second one runs on a perturb, on a deform contour, deform in this way with epsilon in a small deformation, and the deformation is up to you. You can take the second contour being not linked with the first one, or the second contour can be linked a number of times with the first contour. This is really what I would call the choice of your regularization scheme. What happens is that when you compute now the correlation function, basically you just insert the usual gauge propagator in three dimensions, because since the propagator has this particular structure, when eventually at the end of the calculation you take epsilon to zero to remove your regularization, what you end up with is this chi, which is nothing but the Gauss linking number, which is nothing but indeed the winding number, so how many times the second, the frame contour goes around the first one, okay? It's interesting that in this kind of theories, this one loop result, in fact, exponentiates, so eventually the structure of the Wilson loop at quantum level is the product of what we call framing factor, which is indeed the exponentiation of the one loop result, times a framing independent function, which is still a topological invariant. So everything is expressed in terms of a topological invariant. Obvious things that I have to do if I'm dealing with a topological theory. Okay. What happens? I don't know what to do. Now, here it is. Okay. I don't know what happened. Okay. So the same. Let me just, no, there should be another, okay, yeah. here we are. The reason why the one loop result is exponentiated, this is interesting because I'm going to tell you later, is due basically to, main reasons. The first one is that in this topological theory, the propagator is one loop exact, so this is the actual result at any order of the theory. Therefore, then, as these two people discussed, you can have contributions to framing only when you have the so-called collapsible propagators, which mean propagators whose hands can be taken together in the at the same point. So these are indeed the structure of diagrams that can contribute to framing. And then finally, a factorization theorem, which tells you that if you have a diagram composed by collapsible propagators times something else, the result is simply the product of the two contributions. Good. The same thing happens if you go to the supersymmetric case. So let me consider a pure Chern-Simon theory, but with n equal to 2 supersymmetry now. Still in this case, you have that your final result for the Wilson loop is a free factor, a face, which is indeed framing dependent. So it's a sort of a signal that you did a particular regularization. So eventually, this is indeed a regularization scheme dependent result, but you know how it depends on the regularization times a framing independent function. What is interesting is that if you have enough supersymmetry, you may want to compute this Wilson loop using localization. And the message of this slide is that if you use localization, localization is sensible to framing, because from localization, you will always get a result at framing one. Why one? Because framing, when you frame, you regularize your theory. Framing has to be consistent with supersymmetry, otherwise you cannot localize. And the framing is consistent with supersymmetry only if the original contour and the frame one are two ops fibers of F3, but they are linked one, so that's the reason why the result from localization is always at framing one. Okay. But remember, we are not dealing with pure Chern-Simon, we are dealing with ABJM, so now I add matter. The theory is no longer topological, so the question is what happens to framing, given that now I'm dealing with a non-topological theory. Framing was apparently a topological effect. What we discovered is that, for instance, looking at the bosonic Wilson loop, matter, in fact, contributes to framing, and contributes to framing in two different ways. First of all, it is no longer true that the two-point function, the propagator, is one loop exact, so you will get an infinite number of corrections here, going higher in loops. And moreover, it is no longer true that only the so-called collapsible propagators contribute to framing, because now, in the presence of matter, also vertex diagrams contribute to framing. And the final result of this discussion is that if you, for instance, perform a three-loop calculation, this is what we did, you discover that the framing effects are still building up a phase factor in front of your result, but the phase factor is no longer the exponential of a constant of the Gauss linking number, but it is indeed a function of the coupling constant. Lambda 1 and lambda 2 are simply n1 over k and n2 over k. So this is what we will call the framing function, in fact. Okay, and this result has been conferred by localization calculations. Good, another very interesting properties of this set of Wilson loops is that If you look at the expression of the Wilson fermionic Wilson loop, as I wrote it before, and the bosonic ones, you will discover, and that was done by Drucker and Trancanelli, that they are cohomological equivalent, which means that W fermionic is equal to this linear combination of the bosonic ones plus Q of something, where Q is a supercharge given by a linear combination of the supercharges preserved by bosonic and fermionic Wilson loops. Okay, so the question is, how does classical equivalence promoted, let's say, at the quantum level? Well, the intuition would tell me that this point, if I localize, if I insert this expression inside the path integral and I use Q, this Q, to localize the path integral, this contribution will be killed, and what we should end up with is exactly the same identification between the fermionic and the bosonic Wilson loops, except that now we have to take into account that by doing localization, we are computing BEV at framing one, so this should be true when everything is computed at framing one. And in fact, this sort of intuition was later confirmed by a two-loop calculation, where this identity is true indeed if we define the contribution at framing one as the right two loops, as the right framing factor in front times the contribution at framing zero, which is the ordinary contribution that you can compute, for instance, in dimensional regularization. Okay. Now, let's move to consider a generalization of these two classes of Wilson loops. So let me introduce what we call latitude Wilson loops, because they have even more interesting properties. So what do I do? I will, first of all, take my bosonic or fermionic Wilson loop out of the maximal circle. Remember, I was computing the fermionic and the bosonic Wilson loops on the great circle on S2, but I can think of computing them on a latitude, which is featured by an angle theta zero. And I can even decide that, respecting a given amount of supersymmetry, the internal couplings, remember the couplings which describe how the scalars and the fermions enter the definition of the operators, may depend on this extra angle alpha. Okay, what is nice that these two angles, theta zero and alpha, have a completely different origin, but nonetheless, eventually everything turns out to depend only on this this product actually, which I call nu, and nu, of course, is a real number between zero and one. Good. Therefore, just to give you an idea how they look like, you can construct the same kind of bosonic Wilson loop, but now with couplings which depend on nu. And because of this nu, the number of preserved supersymmetry which will be less, so we have a 1/12 BPS. And we can construct the same way, fermionic Wilson loop, but now you see the couplings, eta to the fermions, and m, the couplings to the scalars, depend on nu. And this turns out to be, in general, 1/6 BPS. Okay. First of all, one may wonder whether cohomological equivalence is still at work, even for this deformed Wilson loops, and the answer is yes, at classical level. In fact, at classical level, you can show that there is this linear combination of bosonic Wilson loops, which correspond to fermionic Wilson loop, up to a cohomological term generated by a supercharge, which now depends on nu. Once again, we may ask what happens if I move to at quantum level. So if I think of inserting this expression inside my path integral to compute the vacuum expectation values of the two terms, if I think of localizing the path integral using this supercharge, I expect that the classical equivalence will be promoted in the same form at quantum level. But the surprise is that this is something that we checked at perturbative level. The surprise is that now the cohomological equivalence works if you think of this VEV as to be computed at framing nu. Nu is not an integer, so you may wonder what is the meaning of having a framing nu. At the level of matrix model, things works perfectly. I can always think of taking the analytical continuation of my framing that was originally integer to non-integer numbers, and this is what happens. In fact, you have to define this object at framing nu. If you do that, at least with a check up to two loops, the cohomological equivalence gives you exactly the same correspondence. But this means that we have a new concept of framing. So framing in these non-topological theories seem to be quite different, seems to have at least quite different interpretation. Okay, so this result that we found called, of course, for a confirmation from a from the point of view of localization. And in fact, what we did, since we were not able at the very beginning to perform an actual localization using the supercharge Q of nu, which gives you the cohomological equivalence, what we did was to figure out a matrix model, which should be already the result of some localization procedure, which computes for us this VEV of Wilson-Loof VEVs. So how did we construct this matrix model? Just take the ordinary matrix model computing computing the ordinary bosonic Wilson loop without deformation, without nu equal to one, and replace it with a similar matrix model where now we have inserted a nu dependent, trivial nu dependence in a suitable way. Okay, so what we managed to do was to evaluate to this matrix model in the larger limit, and what we find is a close expression for the VEV of the bosonic latitude Wilson loop in terms of Airy functions, and assuming that cohomological equivalence works at framing nu, we did compute, in fact, a closed expression, an exact expression, for the fermionic Wilson loop. Okay, this was just a proposal, so of course the proposal, as usual, calls for some non-trivial check, and in fact, let me go through a list of important checks that we did. So first of all, it's a matter of fact, this by construction, that if we set nu equal to one and we go back to non-deform Wilson loops, we reproduce exactly the same matrix model that has been already introduced by these people for the ordinary Wilson loops. There is a strong consistency check at the level of partition function. In fact, if you go back here, and you do not insert the operator, just compute the partition function. The partition function should be independent by the localization, independent of the localization procedure, which means that it shouldn't know anything about the particular supercharge that you choose in order to localize the path integral. And in fact, what we did check is, at least for the ABJM theory, so N1 is equal to N2, the partition function does not depend on nu. We get the ordinary standard expression. Okay, then we did the three loop calculation at framing nu for the bosonic Wilson loop, and we checked that in fact the result matches with the weak coupling expansion of our exact expression. But the exact expression passed also a number of checks, also at strong coupling. In fact, its leading behavior, a strong coupling, matches, in fact, the holographic prediction, which is this one. that was done in this paper by these people. And very recently, Medina Rincon computed the one loop correction to this ratio, which is the ordinary Wilson loop, fermionic Wilson loop, divided the latitude, the parametric fermionic Wilson loop. He computed it from the string theory point of view at one loop, and the result perfectly matches the prediction that you can get from our matrix model. And finally, let me just mention, for what I'm going to tell you in the last part of my talk, that our matrix model satisfies this very important identity. So if I take the log of the sum of the two and I take the derivative with respect to nu, the result is zero. At nu equal to one, the result is zero. Okay. Finally, so let me go to the last point. I would like to give you the connection to describe how framing is connected to the Strahlung functions, and that will end up eventually with new interpretation and a new interpretation of the meaning of framing in a non-topological theory like ABJM. Okay, so let me just remind you what are the Bren-Strahlung functions. Well, we can define the Bren-Strahlung function following these people as the coefficient which gives you the energy lost by a massive quark slowly moving in a gauge background, according to the usual formula, which generalizes the usual QED formula, okay? But if you are dealing with a conformal field theory, this coefficient B, this function B, appears also in a completely different context, which is this one. So suppose you compute a cusped Wilson line, so you compute your operator not on a circle, not on a closed path, but on a cusp. The cusp is identified by an angle phi. What you will find is that because of some, you know, short distance divergences close to the cusp, you have to regularize the computation, introducing, for instance, dimensional regularization. So you have the appearance of this epsilon. You have also to regularize infrared divergences with a cutoff L here and here. And what you discover is that when you compute a quantum level this cusp, the divergent part exponentiates in this way, and the coefficient of the log of the divergence is what people call the cusp anomalous function, cusp anomalous dimension. It is a function of phi. It is also a function of the coupling constant of the theory, and for phi very small, it goes like minus phi squared times b, where b is exactly the same b as before, okay? So in our case, in three dimensions, we have different kinds of Wilson loops. So we may define a cusp bosonic Wilson loop, a cusp fermionic Wilson loop. And in fact, if you do that, you will recognize that if you, for instance, compute a fermionic cusp, there is, a fermionic cusp anomalous dimension, which has the following behavior. Sorry, here I also introduced a theta angle, which gives you the relative coupling with scalars along the two lines. So you have a dependence on two angles, the cusp and the internal angle. So for small angles, this is the behavior of the cusp, where B one half is what we can call the Bren-Strahlung function for the fermionic Wilson loop. So the fermionic Bren-Strahlung, if you wish. And you can do the same for the bosonic Wilson loop, but in this case, the behavior in theta square and phi square is uncorrelated because there is no BPS conditions on these Wilson loops. Therefore, we have to define two different bosonic Bren-Strahlung, what I call B theta and B phi. Good, perfect. This You may consider these Bren-Strahlung functions as physical quantities that you can compute in this physical theory, if you don't consider ABJM as a physical theory. But you, of course, computing them through this general definition would imply doing very highly non-trivial perturbative calculations to figure out the gamma cusp, and then taking the derivative respect to the angles, blah, blah, blah. But of course, this would give you a result which would be far away from being an exact result. Whereas we know that for circular Wilson loops, we can have exact results in terms of matrix models. So the idea is to relate somehow B with circular Wilson loops. This was done initially in this paper by Lechowitz and Maldacena, where they proposed indeed that this B phi, this one, can be computed according to this expression, where WBM is the bosonic Wilson loop in an MBJM on a circle, but the bosonic, the contour winds m times around the circle. If you take the derivative respect to m, the winding number, and you compute this expression that m equal to 1, you end up with the correct expression for B. And remember that for this guy, we have an exact result in terms of matrix model. So this implies that you may hope to have an exact result for the Bresnahan function. But what about the other Bresnahan functions? Well, our proposal is the following. If we take our latitude Wilson loops, which depend on nu, the famous parameter nu, and you take the derivative of log of the fermionic, we propose that you end up with B fermionic, the Bresnahan function, fermionic-Bresnahan function, and if you take the same expression in terms of the bosonic Wilson loop, you end up with the theta Bresnahan, okay? That at the beginning was just a proposal, and in fact it passed a number of tests as at weak coupling and strong coupling, but later on both the expressions were exactly proved and checked in these two papers. Okay, now what is the relation with framing? And here comes the important identity that I stressed, and which is satisfied by our matrix model. Okay, when we compute, for instance, the VEV for the bosonic Wilson loop because of these framing contributions, you will end up with a result which is in general complex. As you do for ordinary complex numbers, you can write the VEV as the modulo times the phase, okay? And this phase, for sure, includes all framing effects, not only framing effects, but for sure all the framing effects. Now, if you put together two informations, one, the cohomological equivalence between fermionic and bosonic Wilson loops, plus this nice and unexpected identity satisfied by our results, our matrix models, we find, with a simple calculation, that the fermionic Bresnahan is nothing but the tangent of this object, which is the famous framing function that I was mentioning at the beginning of my talk, which is basically the exponent of the phase associated to the framing appearing in this calculations. If you compute B theta, it was proved that that it should be related to B phi. You get something a little bit more complicated, but still something which is strongly related to framing. Therefore, we propose a new physical interpretation of framing that, as I want to remind you once again, in the topological theory was simply a topological effect, to be now a physical effect. Framing gives you a physical quantity, the Bresnahan function. Okay, done. So let me come to my conclusions, where basically I want to stress three main directions or investigations. The first one is the following. As I told you, we have a proposal for a matrix model to compute this object, this latitude Wilson loops. The proposal seems to be correct because it passed already a number of non-trivial checks, but it would be very nice to have a derivation starting from the very beginning, from the path integral, localize the path integral, and find the correct supercharge to be used to localize, and produce our matrix model from basic this procedure. This is something that some people are working on now. The second point, the second thing that would be very nice to do in order to exploit our results is the following. As I told you, the Bresnahan functions are related to derivative of the Wilson loops. For the Wilson loops, we do have an exact expression. So in principle, we have an exact expression for the Bresnahan functions. On the other hand, in four dimensions, the Bresnahan functions were computed by these people using a system of TBA equations, basically exploiting integrability underlying the correspondence. If we were able to do the same calculation in three dimensions, we would end up with our result and a completely independent result obtained via TBA. And matching the two results, we certainly would gain informations about the famous interpolating function h of lambda, which enters integrability calculations. And since Gromov and Sydow put forward already a proposal, a conjecture for the exact expression of this h of lambda, this is certainly a promising way to check this proposal. Okay, finally, just to make contact with the subject of this workshop, there is certainly a strong connection of what we have done with one-dimensional defect field theories, conformal field theories, or subsectors of topological field theories, in the sense that, as I told you at the beginning, of course, a Wilson line, a Wilson loop can be considered a defect. So I may want to study the theory directly on the defect, maybe gaining information on the one-dimensional conformal field theory from the higher dimensional theory, which is ABJM, the theory where I am embedding my defect. And in fact, we have already some connections and some informations. For example, as I told you, every time you have a Wilson loop which depends on a parameter, you can take the derivative of the Wilson loop respect to the parameter, and you will end up with a correlation function on the one-dimensional defect theory. Okay? So results that we have already on the left-hand side may be used to get information on the right-hand side. And in particular, for instance, this is something that we have still to better understand, we found that, for instance, at three loops, there are contributions that certainly from the point of view of the one-dimensional theory are related to contact terms that you have to introduce to better define these correlation functions at coincident points with some imaginary terms in the Wilson loop, which have nothing to do with framing. Usually imaginary terms are related to framing. These are new imaginary terms which have a completely different origin. Another important thing is that if you exploit cohomological equivalence at quantum level, this gives you non-trivial identities among correlation functions of the one-dimensional conformal field theory. Therefore, this information might be very useful, for instance, for one-dimensional bootstrap program. And finally, well, this is just a question, an open question, what is the meaning of framing from the point of view of the one-dimensional conformal field theory, and which is, for instance, the relation, if there is some duality, something between one-dimensional conformal field theories built up on a bosonic and on a fermionic Wilson loops. And now we have two different kinds of fermionic and bosonic Wilson loops. Okay, thank you very much.
Any questions? Let's thank you again.
Thank you.